Call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is March 15th, 2022. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and in live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hansen is present. Vice Chair Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz present.
Lead Heinzman.
Present.
Representative Acomb.
Present.
Representative Ackland.
Present.
Representative Backer.
Backer present.
Representative Becker Finn. I believe is excused. Representative Ackland.
Present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Representative Green.
Present.
Representative Igo is excused. Representative Jordan.
Jordan present.
Representative Keeler. Representative Keeler. Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lipper.
Lipper present.
Representative Lewick.
Lewick present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Representative Tice.
Tice present.
And Representative Keeler.
Keeler present.
Keeler present. Thank you.
A quorum is present. Representative Tice, would you like to move the minutes from March 10th? Sorry to get you in mid-bite there. Sorry about
that. It's a ding-dong. I haven't had one for years, Mr. Chair. Anyway, I do move the minutes.
Representative Tice moves the minutes for March 10th, 2022. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes are approved. First up, members, we have House File 2814 by Representative Ackland, Farm Survey Owner Requirements Modified. And we estimate about 45 minutes for this. Representative Ackland, will you move that House File 2814 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that House File 2814 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
And Representative Ackland, I believe you have an author's amendment. Could you move the amendment and explain the amendment briefly?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the DE2 amendment to get the bill in shape I want. To explain the amendment, I apologize, Mr. Chair. I'll just run through a quick summary of the amendment. Section 1 requires owners of escape farm survey to immediately notify the Board of Animal Health if the escape survey isn't found within 24 hours. It all involves the hunters to kill an escape survey without having to compensate the owner. And it requires the owner to pay the cost of the CWD testing. Section 2 and 3 requires farm survey owners to confine their animals in a way that keeps them from coming into contact with free roaming survey. It also requires farmed white-tailed deer to be enclosed by two or more perimeter fences, with each perimeter fence at least 120 inches high. Section 4 requires ID tags for farm survey to include contact information with a phone number or address that allows the reader to easily identify the owner. The information on this tag does not have to be visible from 50 yards. Section 5 prohibits Board of Animal Health from issuing any new registrations for farm survey. Section 6 prohibits moving farm survey to another location. When CWD is found in a farm herd, the owner is required to cooperate with the DNR and Board of Animal Health during the investigation. It also prohibits any farms whose herd have tested positive for CWD from raising farm survey for 10 years, requires soil testing before the property is sold, requires owners to file a record with the county, the date of depopulation and date of CWD detection, and it requires the Board of Animal Health to treat the premises as a CWD endemic area. Section 7 requires both CWD live testing and postmortem testing for every farm white-tailed deer starting no later than October 2022 using the RT-QUIC method. These tests would be reported to the Board of Animal Health. Any deer that tests positive would be given a second RT quick test. The bill requires that all deer that test positive twice be destroyed and tested again using a postmortem test. Any farm with a deer that tests positive for CWD with a postmortem test after two live animal positives would be required to depopulate the premises of all farms surveyed. Section 8 transfers the authority over Cervidae farms from the Board of Animal Health to the DNR. Section 9 appropriates $250,000 to the DNR for RT quick testing. And that, Mr. Chair, in a nutshell, is the DE2 amendment.
Are there any questions to the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Eklund, two-year bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to let members know that we have listened. When we get to the Ways and Means, there will be another amendment to clean a couple more things up that I forgot to have Ms. Taylor do for me when we got this amendment put together. I want to compliment Ms. Taylor on the great work she's done. She does yeoman's work for this committee, and I appreciate it. We've heard all the comments on this bill several times, Mr. Chair, so I would prefer just to go to testifiers, and then we can do a close.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. Dr. Peter Larson, University of Minnesota. We will hold questions till the end, and if each of the testifiers could state who they are and who they're representing, if they're representing anyone. Dr. Larson.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and members of the committee. Thank you so much for the opportunity to appear before you today. My name is Peter Larson. I'm assistant professor at the University of Minnesota and am co-director of MinPro, the Minnesota Center for Prion Research and Outreach. I am here today to testify as to the utility of the RT-Quick assay for CWD diagnostics, including live animal testing. RT-Quick is a highly sensitive and accurate diagnostic assay for the detection of prions. The test was designed over 10 years ago by researchers focused on developing antemortem diagnostics for crust-celled Jakob disease in humans. Over 300 peer-reviewed scientific publications have been published on RT-Quick, and the test is now routinely used in research labs for the detection of prion diseases, including CWD. The performance of RT-Quick has been extensively examined for a wide variety of tissue types and biological samples. When using tissue samples for the detection of CWD, the RT-Quick assay generates reliable and reproducible results with low rates of false positives and false negatives. Our MinPro research team has been and is currently working closely with both the DNR and Board of Animal Health on a variety of research projects that leverage RT-Quick, and the test has facilitated important discoveries. For example, we recently published a peer-reviewed manuscript with DNR co-authors that showed the RT-Quick test was highly accurate for CWD testing of tissues and was more sensitive than the ELISA test. Recent publications out of Michigan and Pennsylvania also show that RT-Quick is comparable to traditional CWD tests, leaving the authors to conclude that the method would be useful for future CWD surveillance programs. We have also published RT-Quick protocols for testing venison for CWD prions, and we believe the test can be used for future food safety applications aimed at preventing CWD prions from entering human and animal food chains. Our team recently validated RT-Quick internally, and the results clearly show the test performs as good or better than the commonly used ELISA and IHC tests. The bottom line is that RT-Quick is not producing spurious or non-reproducible results when examining cervid tissues. Our MinPro research laboratory has performed thousands of RT-Quick reactions in a variety of tissue types, and our assessment of the test is consistent with that of other research labs. We believe it will be an important tool for managing CWD. One of the major hurdles for expanding the use of RT-Quick for CWD surveillance was that the reagents needed to perform the assay were not widely available. 3 years ago, this was identified as a significant limitation, slowing the USDA validation process and preventing the establishment of a national RT-Quick surveillance network. I'm happy to report that our MinPro team was successful in solving this problem. MinPro is now producing large quantities of the essential ingredient for RT-Quick, and we are supplying this ingredient to the USDA to facilitate their validation process. The fact that the USDA is in the process of validating RT-Quick should not be perceived as a weakness of the test itself. Any diagnostic test used for official regulatory purposes must be subjected to an intensive assessment by regulatory officials and scientists. That process takes time, as it should, and it is structured to provide a thorough understanding of the accuracy of any new diagnostic test for a national reportable disease. Based on comments made by the USDA at a recent Board of Animal Health meeting, we fully anticipate RT-QuIC to be validated for live animal testing using rectal biopsy tissues within the next year. We note that Texas has already begun live animal testing using rectal biopsies in the IHC test. Upon completion of the USDA validation process, we anticipate that several states will incorporate RT-QuIC-based live animal testing into their CWD management plans. Considering these observations, our MinPro team recommends the state begin a concerted effort to plan the logistics of incorporating RT-QuIC-based live animal testing into Minnesota's CWD management plan. I'd like to briefly comment on the usage of RT-QuIC for detecting CWD prions in soil samples. Several research teams, including ours, have been working to develop RT-QuIC protocols for soil-based environmental testing of CWD. Extracting CWD prions from soil is a complex problem, which relates directly to the complexity of soil. Developing robust and reliable RT-QuIC protocols for detecting CWD prions in soil samples will require additional scientific research before such methods are available for regulatory purposes. To conclude, our MinPro research team is in full support of the usage of RT-QuIC for CWD surveillance. We are happy to assist the state and the University of Minnesota Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory with the development of CWD management strategies that leverage RT-QuIC technology. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Tony Quillis, Minnesota Elk Breeders Association.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis, and I'm representing the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association this afternoon, and thank you for the time to make a couple of comments on House File 2814, specifically the DE2 amendment. Mr. Chairman, starting in Section 1, dealing with a hunter licensed by the commissioner may kill and possess an escaped farm survey. Again, I'd like to go back to where we testified last year, that the hunting season, the legal hunting season for elk is only located up in three counties up in northwestern Minnesota, and only, I don't have it right in front of me, from August to December, if I remember correctly, Mr. Chairman. The rulemaking that's going on at the Board of Animal Health also that's been paused temporarily, but also addresses this issue. But the other thing is the key word, as I said, is possess. The hunter may kill and possess. Those animals of the folks that are people that I represent could be worth hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. And then if we have to be able to test them, if that hunter will not, as he possesses it, won't let us test it, he's the one that's in charge of it. We have to pay for it. We have no control over the test. We have no control over who performs the test, what type of test or the cost, whether it be an ELISA test or an IHC test. So there are some concerns there in Section 1, Mr. Chairman. In Section 2, where we're dealing with the fencing, just probably seeking some clarity there that it looks like double fencing, but I'm not positive on that. It just says that it has to prevent contact between farm survey and free roaming survey. So does shade cloth work there? Does electric wire work there? Does the fencing, if it is double fencing, have to be 96 inches or 8 feet? And depending if it is double fencing, Mr. Chairman, depending on the size of the facility, would result in a significant financial cost to that farmer. Moving on to page 4, Mr. Chairman, of the DE2, there's no scientific evidence from going from 5 to 10 years to maintain fencing or not raising farm survey from 5 to 10 years. Like I said, we've not been able to find any proof scientifically that makes a difference, Mr. Chairman. Going into the soil testing again, Mr. Chairman, I had testified to this previously, and Dr. Larson just touched on it. There is no approved either at the federal or state level yet on soil tests. And we also worry about the second part of that we discussed previously also, that for a live deer that wanders onto private land, they are not held to the same requirements that are required under number 7 there, Mr. Chairman. And then also, the definition doesn't seem to fit on 4.23 to 4.24 or any state is deemed an endemic area. The state of Minnesota doesn't even deem an endemic area a whole state. It's deemed within an area of 15 square miles, usually for a length of period of 3 years, Mr. Chairman. So they're trying to figure out why that definition would be for an endemic area to include a whole state. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, last year, the legislature in Section 8 of this bill asked the Department of Natural Resources and the Board of Animal Health, Mr. Chairman, to do co-manage, if you will, or have some concurrent authority looking forward in doing regulation with the farm service industry. We haven't even gotten 6 months, 8 months into it, Mr. Chairman, and now there's already essentially presuming a failure of the two agencies to work together and to move and take all of the authority away from the Board of Animal Health and grant it to the Department of Natural Resources. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'll stick around for any questions. I know you've got a couple of other folks that would like to testify.
Dave Carlson, Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Dave Carlson, the president of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance, which I'll refer to as MOHA. And MOHA is an organization that represents over 50 groups across the state. And we advocate for the sportsmen and sportswomen's interests in many different areas. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 2814. A little background about CWD from MOHA's perspective. CWD has been an issue that's come up at meetings that we've held with sportsmen and women across the state for the last several years, and it is of utmost importance. It's well known that deer hunting is a treasured outdoor heritage for many, and that the protection of the wild deer herd in Minnesota is of utmost importance. Since CWD was discovered in Minnesota, there has not been enough of an effort to eradicate the disease and to protect our wild deer herd. We know that CWD has no known cure. It is not treatable and is ultimately fatal. This makes it an undeniable threat to animal and herd health for farm deer and wild deer. Sportsmen and sportswomen have loudly called for more legislation to protect our wild deer herd for several years. Since 2018, those calls have become louder. And although good legislation has been introduced and heard, not much has been passed. 2814 is a good bill. With these additional amendments, it makes it better, and it starts to provide live testing for farm deer, and that testing is funded. Sportsmen and sportswomen support this legislation and ask for more common sense legislation to protect the wild deer herd of Minnesota and help leave a legacy for the deer hunting tradition in our great state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Tim Spreck, Minnesota Deer Farmers Association.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Tim Spreck. I am representing the interests of the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. I'm going to address my comments to the lines and sections on the DE amendment, starting with line 1.17 to 1.19, hunters kill and possess escaped captive deer. Mr. Chair, this really disregards personal property ownership rights. It allows someone to take and possess the property of another without compensation. It also turns the hunter into an agent of the state doing this type of work without any compensation for the hunter. This would not happen with any other form of livestock. In fact, on its face, it's actually kind of comical to think that you would allow hunters to harvest livestock and also to take it and possess it. Under the fencing provisions in Section 2 and 3, it looks like we're looking for double fencing here again. We've talked about this off and on for a number of years. There's no evidence that this really works any better, and it does have an incredibly high and expensive and prohibitive cost. What we're kind of doing here is we're moving the goalposts. When an individual starts a deer farm, they take a look at their expenses. They determine how they can be profitable. They buy their infrastructure and put up their equipment. And all of a sudden we're asking them to additionally pay. In some cases, it could be another 50 to 100,000. This puts them in a nonprofit situation. 10-foot high fencing, there's also no evidence that this works any better. It's just needlessly punitive and financially punitive against the deer farming industry. I don't believe that this is required anywhere in the country. Going down to identification on line 2.32 to 3.2, deer already have tags with information that's easily accessible. They have a USDA tag and a Board of Animal Health tag. I think sometimes people are concerned about having their personal contact information out in the general public. And I think in a situation where a deer might happen to escape, it's pretty easy to find out who the owner is just by making that telephone call. Line 3.32 to 3.24 under no new registrations. New deer farms are kind of the lifeblood of the industry. We've also discussed this several times over the past several years. New farms are the place where we sell breeding stock, where we sell does, we sell fawns, we sell equipment, feed, semen, and expertise. They kind of help keep the industry viable and help the people that are currently in the business to continue commerce in a meaningful way. Without new deer farms, we would have trouble keeping the business functioning. No movement of whitetails, 4.1 to 4.2. This precludes any movement of any kind. So for instance, if you have a breeding area across the street from your hunting preserve, you couldn't populate your hunting preserve, you couldn't move animals, you couldn't sell animals. And once again, movement is critical to being able to conduct commerce in a meaningful fashion. The depopulation statutes beginning on line 4.16. There's no evidence to support the CWD remains in the soil for 10 years. I think this is needlessly punitive, and it just really targets the deer farmers by placing additional encumbrances on their ability to conduct their business in a meaningful way. Soil testing, not currently USDA approved, as Dr. Larson indicated earlier, is very complicated. If we're going to require this to be done, we've got to have an approved, reliable test, and we're just not there yet, Mr. Chair. Moving on, recording CWD with the county on line 4.19. It's another area we've discussed in both in the environment and the ag committees. What it does is it places deed restrictions and encumbrances upon the property. I think if we're concerned about this, we've already got a number of pieces in statute that indicate that upon depopulation, we have to have a number of items in a given protocol that have to be completed, and they are more than sufficient, Mr. Chair. We don't want to have a lifelong encumbrance on a property without knowing if CWD prions are even going to be viable in the soil moving forward. Animal imports on line 4.23. The Board of Animal Health already controls commerce with CWD zones. This piece is not needed since it really puts the entire state out of reach. There are a lot of large states out there that may have a problem in one area that could be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles away from a clean area with clean herds that are certified. We'd like to be able to continue to conduct meaningful commerce in these areas. On lines 4.25 to 5.6, live animal testing required. Another item we've also discussed on several occasions. This depends on a test that is not USDA approved. Although we're hopeful and looking forward to the test being approved, it currently is not approved and the USDA does not recommend it. I'd like to also ask you all to think back to the letter to Dr. Torreson, which we've discussed both here and in the Ag Committee in the past couple weeks, which indicates that the USDA is not approving this test. It may not approve it for quite some time. And also, Mr. Chair, there would be consequences if the U of M were to move forward and use the RT quick test without approval. On the transfer to DNR in Section 8, 2021 session created co-management with the Board of Animal Health and the DNR. Captive deer are livestock by definition. The Board of Animal Health should have jurisdiction. The DNR was brought on to help with some additional things and to take it out of the Board of Animal Health's expertise. An agency that has a long history going back over 100 years dealing with livestock and the management and eradication of disease would be a major mistake at this point, Mr. Chair. I think we need to let the co-management work. It's very young in its infancy, and move forward in the future based on their level of success. Also, we need to make sure that we consider the DNR's role here. Would we want them to universally and unilaterally manage other livestock like cattle or poultry? We would not. We like the Board of Animal Health being involved. Mr. Chair, just a couple of quick little comments. This sort of comes back to what we've discussed earlier. The deer farming industry is really in peril. We have hurt them dramatically by government actions. There's a lot of folks that have left the industry. It's really a death by a thousand cuts, and I think we're looking at a thousand more with this bill. It really does end the industry. So what we need to do is have a meaningful discussion about what the government is willing to do to help these folks out. We put the option of discussing a buyout on the table, and that's still a viable alternative. And I stand ready to have those discussions at any time. So with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the time and thank you.
Thank you. Kelly Straka, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for hearing my testimony today. My name is Kelly Straka. I am a licensed veterinarian and the Wildlife Section Manager for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. The department would like to issue a statement of support for all provisions that minimize the risk of disease transmission between farmed and wild white-tailed deer in Minnesota. We are working closely with the Board of Animal Health to address these risks. Similarly, we eagerly await the validation of RTQIC as a live animal test for regulatory use. A special thanks to MinPro for their expertise with this assay and their efforts to expedite the validation process. Finally, I recognize the amendment to this bill adds several more requirements for Minnesota's white-tailed deer producers. I would like to highlight one in particular in Section 8 regarding the transfer of duties. I respectfully suggest that we are still in the first year of white-tailed deer co-management with the Board of Animal Health, and it is our preference to continue with co-management in order to capitalize on the strength and expertise that staff in both agencies can bring to this issue. With that, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Bob Meyer, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, sorry, I'm having some difficulties here. Dr. Strachter did a great job identifying our position. I was just here basically to answer any questions that people may have, Mr. Chairman.
Amy Cordray.
Good afternoon, and thank you, committee members, for hearing me today. I am Amy Cordray, live in rural southeast Minnesota. Almost exactly 3 years ago today, I testified to the Senate Environmental and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee on the need for additional attention and support for chronic wasting disease regulation. In the meantime, I live adjacent to a decommissioned cervid farm and in a Department of Natural Resources, CWD, first priority zone for over 4 years, and it doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon. As the at-large member of the public on the Board of Animal Health's Farm Cervid Rulemaking Committee, I worked for a really long time, by the way, with concerned cervid farmers and agencies who are willing to follow the regulations protecting all cervids from CWD. Unfortunately, I also worked with, and the evidence has clearly shown, that there are cervid farmers who are unconcerned about livestock and environmental health. Please do not let CWD continue to flourish. I don't want to be back here in another 3 years saying the same thing, and start supporting these bills, get them in shape, and pass them. Thank you very much for your valuable time.
Thank you. And I have Chair Jackson from the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, but it's my understanding he is testifying to the second bill, if that's correct.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Bonjour, good afternoon, Chairman Hansen and committee members. My name is Farron Jackson, Sr., and I am the chairman of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on our behalf today. First of all, I want to say, you know, I'm an avid deer hunter myself, 60 years of deer hunting myself personally up here in northern Minnesota. You know, and our family gets together and we hunt annually, and, you know, and it's kind of a time for bonding, you know, and we've always been pretty successful hunters up here in our area. And a lot of the deer that's been taken up on Leech Lake here by natives and non-natives have always been huge deer. Back when I remember, even when I was a kid, a lot of them registered with the Pope and Young, Boone and Crockett, and we always had huge deer up this way. So I was kind of astounded to see, you know, when these deer farms started coming to surface here. This chronic waste disease, CWD, is of great concern to the Leech Lake Band. And recently, it has had a direct impact on our band members. Last year, a cervid farm just 12 miles from the Leech Lake Reservation boundary was found to have deer that tested positive for chronic waste disease. The farm owner was also disposing CWD-infected deer carcasses on public land near the cervid farm. This is extremely alarming and has put our resources and primary source of food at risk. Many of our families at Leech Lake still maintain a subsistence lifestyle, and diet of venison is a staple of their diet. In addition, like many of you on this committee, deer hunting is an important lifeway for the people of Leech Lake. However, it is a bit different for us because we hunt to feed our families and maintain a connection to our natural environment and sustain our spirituality. Our hunting and gathering rights are tied to the lands within the Leech Lake Reservation. We cannot exercise these hunting and gathering rights in a different part of the state. So if our deer herds on the reservation is infected with CWD, there is no deer for us to hunt to feed our families. We have approximately 700 Leech Lake tribal deer hunters every year. If CWD has infected our wild deer population, those 700 tribal deer hunters will be denied the ability to exercise their treaty rights to hunt and gather and sustain their families throughout the year. This would be extremely devastating to our entire tribe. This past year, we provided testing to all our deer hunters, and fortunately, all tested negative for CWD. We are hopeful CWD did not escape the infected farm, but we will take several more years of testing to assure that it has not. We are pleased the DNR has taken action to put a fence around the disposal area on public lands to prevent other deer from coming in contact with the CWD infected area. But there is more that needs to be done. The cervid farms have been the primary carriers of CWD and have compromised our ability to exercise our treaty rights, feed our families, and maintain our Anishinaabe way of life. For that reason, the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe respectfully requests that this committee support HF 3273, because we do not see any other way to get this disease under control without implementing a moratorium on cervid farms. We hope the DNR and Board of Animal Health continues to collaborate with us so changes can be made to protect the band's resources. We also hope the DNR continues to collaborate with us on CWD testing so there is a positive detection. We can act swiftly to control this disease. I want to thank you all for your time this afternoon, and I am available here to ask any questions at any time. Miigwech.
Thank you, Chair Jackson. I believe that is it for the testifiers, so we have several questions. Go with Representative Fisher first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first thing I'd like to do is I'm going to have some questions in terms of how long, this would probably be for Dr. Larson, is getting a little bit more information about how long prions last in the soils. What have you folks been seeing? I know that through past testimony in the past, I've heard that it's very difficult to get rid of prions. If you could educate us a little bit more and refresh our memories is how serious this is, how long lasting they are, and how tough it is to destroy.
Chair Hansen, Dr. Larson.
Chair Hansen, Rep. Fisher, members of the committee. What we know about the duration of infectious prions in the environment comes primarily from other prion diseases like scrapie and BSE in cattle. For scrapie and sheep, it's been shown that those infectious prions can remain in the environment for 16 years and still cause disease. It's also been shown that those prions can bind to dust in scrapie barns and remain infectious for many years. So 16 years is the upper bound for infectious prions in the environment. The research on chronic wasting disease, it's just because the experiments haven't been done long enough, but they've shown 3 to 4 years out of research out of Colorado that they remain infectious in the environment. However, there's no experiment that's been done beyond that. And so from a scientific perspective, it is possible when looking at misfolded or infectious prions that it can remain infectious environment for many years.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Dr. Larson. I appreciate that information. Representative Eklund, I want to say thank you for bringing this bill forward. While we've been hearing some concerns about the impact it might have on deer farmers, what I'm hearing is the real peril out there is what the damage could be to the wild deer herd if this moves from the farms out into the wild deer herd. We just heard eloquently from Chair Jackson the impact that it would have on his nation up in his part of the state of Minnesota. And I know that we have thousands and thousands of Minnesotans who deer hunt every year. I've had deer hunters in my family, including my young daughter. So I know there's a lot of women out there who do deer hunting. And my concern is that if it gets out into the wild deer herd, that we lose that opportunity. And there's the concern that at some point it could cross species and end up infecting the human population as mad cow disease did many years ago. The question I have is, when we take a look at your section 6, will that be strong enough in the future if we find that these prions are very long lived in the environment? Will the protections you have in there be strong enough to make sure that we can protect the areas that are contaminated from coming in contact with wild herd for as long as those prions are infectious?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Fisher. I don't know if Section 6 is strong enough, Representative Fisher, but I think we're going about as far as we can on that, knowing the information that we have.
Representative Fisher.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Eklund. I appreciate what you've mentioned there. It's something that I know that we want to continue to keep an eye on in the future because I think it's the ultimate responsibility of the DNR and the state to do everything that they need to do to protect the wild herd, which is the resources of the state of Minnesota. So thank you so much for the bill and thank you for your efforts.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did have a number of questions, but I think the testifiers did touch on a lot of them. The one thing is that the bill really has a lot of duplicative language in a tongue tie today. But so, you know, you've got two versions of the fencing in here, which should be problematic. But the one thing that I do want to touch on, first of all, is testifier Quillis and Spreck brought up is that it looks like there's going to be a moratorium on moving these animals, whether they test positive or not. That seems a little strange. But the worst part for me is found in Section 8, where, first of all, a lot of the stuff that was done by the DNR uh, in the, in the years leading up to where we're at right now really didn't address this problem in the first place. And as testified, these are livestock, and this should be the Board of Animal Health. We've already taken away some of their authority, and now it looks like in this bill we're going to take away the rest of it and only require the DNR to contract to the Board of Animal Health when the DNR doesn't even want it. So I've got a question for Representative Eklund.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Green, we've been talking about this for quite some time now. Originally, the Farm Survey plan was under the DNR, and we moved to Board of Animal Health. The Board of Animal Health has done very little to stop the movement of chronic wasting disease. So I understand everybody's talking about this is a livestock, this is a farming operation. However, it is unique that we don't have Guernseys that we hunt, but we have white-tailed deer that we hunt. So that's where it's a unique situation, and it needs to be back underneath the purview of the Department of Natural Resources.
Representative Green.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the answer, Representative Eklund, but the fact is the DNR didn't do much to stop it either. And so maybe that's why it was under the Board of Animal Health. But first, the other thing is we still don't know a lot about it. We're still learning about it. And once again, you're putting into a bill something that the agency itself doesn't even want. And so I'm wondering, did you even talk to them before you put this in the bill, your DE amendment?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Green, yes, I've been in almost constant contact with the DNR talking over this situation. They have never expressed to me that they don't want that. So if they've expressed that to you, then we're hearing two different things.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I'll just end with this. I think they just expressed it in their testimony. Thank you.
Representative Wozlik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. I think most of these are going to be for testifiers, but a few questions. I'm wondering if someone from the DNR, perhaps Assistant Commissioner Meyer, could talk about the chairman mentioned the issue up in Beltrami County, and I'm just wondering if there's any update on that fencing issue, if we've resolved the issue of that farmer paying for the fence. So that's my first question, and the second question is I just reminding the committee and members of the public how inspections that BAH and DNR that they're doing together, how those have gone in terms of if you've been able to access all the farms and, you know, what percentage of those farms had issues.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm just looking to see if there's anybody from the Board of Animal Health on the call. As far as the fence goes, that producer did take the Board of Animal Health to administrative court. They sided on behalf of the state and actually stated that because the ground had been sampled, and they referenced the RC quick test in their findings. So they upheld the state's position, and that producer is on the hook for those dollars to reimburse the state. The fence is 10 foot tall, engineered, designed for a 20-year lifespan to protect that area where the illegal disposal occurred. And actually, if you look at the price, I think we actually got some value for that big of a fence that covers 12 acres at that height. So they'd be able to provide you more detail on that. And just as to the last question about our position on the transfer, I talked with Representative Eklund about this last night. If we could get that would be great. Dr. Straka's comments were referring to what we have in hand right now. We obviously want to make sure that works. We don't want to go backwards on it, but if the legislature were desire to transfer the entire program, we would be willing to accept that. Thank you.
Representative Wozlik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Glad to hear that the court sided with the state on that one so we can get that resolved. I think I have a document somewhere about how inspections went, but I'll that's probably a longer answer. But my last question is for Mr. Spreck. He said that, you know, there's a lot of things in this, in the DE and the bill that the Deer Farmers Association doesn't support. And so I'm wondering if he or the association have ideas for how to manage this disease that impacting the farmers if he's available.
Mr. Sprecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wasilewicz, I look forward to our little interchange and discussions every time there's a hearing. I'm not sure if I quite got the gist of what your question was. So maybe if you have just a second, if you could give me a better idea what you're looking for.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm sort of looking for, this bill is proposing several ideas for how to deal with the spread of CWD in the state. And so I'm wondering if the association, whether you have that information now or not, has ideas for how you think we should do this. So if the ideas that are in this bill aren't agreeable or aren't right, what's the Deer Farmers Association's ideas for how we can better manage this disease to keep it from spreading?
Mr. Sprecht.
Thank you. Yes, we actually do have a lot of internal discussion about this. The perfect example is what happened with that farm in Beltrami County. That was a tragedy. It's terrible. I feel just absolutely awful, especially for the tribal members that are concerned about their subsistence deer population and other people in the area. And when this came to light, we knew that this was wrong. We knew that there was problems. We immediately wrote a letter condemning this kind of behavior because under no circumstances should anyone do this. So what's happened as a result of that, even though there are about 150 to 200 individual family farming operations out there that are currently raising whitetail, even though they're all doing it correctly, following the rules and being good stewards, we have one person who has been called a bad actor. Because of that person's action, the entire industry is painted with a very negative broad brush. So, we're very interested in the properly managing the farms that are out there, making sure that everyone understands that they have to do this the right way. Our organization is proud and very, very involved in this type of thing. So to the extent that we can, we always try to do things that are positive, but we also have to understand that chronic wasting disease does exist in the wild. It exists in the wild in areas where there aren't farms. It came in from Wisconsin. It came in from Iowa. There are studies that show that farms can be infected through a variety of different vectors that don't have anything to do with movement. But unfortunately, there's not a lot of discussion about that. What's happened is the deer farms have kind of become the shiny object in this discussion. And the idea that we can solve CWD by putting them out of business is a real fallacy.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't hear super specific ideas. I'll follow up with Mr. Spreck on that. But I do want to note that the legislative audit report that we got from BAH and DNR actually found a 30% violation rate. So I don't think it's one bad actor. I think there are broader issues that we need to address here, and I look forward to continued conversation. Thank you.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions, particularly for the DNR. I see did I hear Dr. Straka that she's a licensed veterinarian? Is that correct?
Dr. Straka.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Lewick, I am.
Great. Well, that's good news. I believe you're the first one in quite some time, if ever, that's been employed by the DNR. But I guess does your background include large animal field practice in the other, in the large animal field?
Dr. Straka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lewick. My background has been largely around wildlife medicine, primarily free-ranging wildlife health. So I was a practicing wildlife veterinarian in Missouri for several years, and then most recently was a wildlife veterinarian for the state of Michigan.
Oh, well, thank you. I guess I've got, this is kind of technical and maybe down in the weeds, but I'm very interested in your perspective on doing the RTC quick test for basically the entire whitetail farm population between now and 1 October 22. And as my understanding, that's it's a rectal biopsy. Have you ever performed a rectal biopsy on a live large four-legged animal?
Dr. Straka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lewick. I have. So I have performed the rectal biopsies on actually wild free-ranging elk. So I have not performed those biopsies on white-tailed deer, but I have done so on wild, not captively held or farmed elk. It is quite an adventure.
Representative Lewick.
Yeah, I you think that it's, I mean, obviously you're maybe a little bit new to the area, but do you know if there are a battery of other licensed large animal vets in resident in the state of Minnesota that have performed those types of biopsies on large animals? Because I would believe there might be a few that have dealt with scrapies over the years, possibly with sheep. But we obviously are dealing with a much different circumstance when you're dealing with a deer or an elk. Obviously, elk is even a bigger challenge.
Dr. Straka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lewick. Yes, so the specific question whether or not we have a number of licensed veterinarians in the state that are proficient or have done that technique before or in other livestock, that I'm not sure. That certainly might be a good question for our partners at the Board of Animal Health or the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association. What I can say is that technique of actually collecting a rectal biopsy from a cervid species is a relatively straightforward technique, and I would be confident that any licensed veterinarian could be properly trained to perform it if they were so inclined.
And Representative Luke, are you asking the same questions of Dr. Larson as with Dr. Straka?
The time I checked is probably not a large animal vet, but maybe he is. I guess, Dr. Larson, are you experienced in doing rectal biopsies on large animals, and do you have a license to do that?
Dr. Larson.
Chair Hansen, Rep. Lewick. I grew up on a farm and handled Herefords. However, I did not do any rectal biopsies. I am not a veterinarian. So that's the extent of my experience is being raised on a farm.
So Dr. Straka's skills are greater in experience than yours, Dr. Larson. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Representative Lewick.
I, Mr. Chair, I would agree. I would agree 100% with that as one who's had to deal with at least not necessarily Guernseys or Jerseys or Holsteins, but a bunch of other large four animals. Here's my concern, and particularly about this deadline. And I did query informally some folks that are in a position to know at the Board of Animal Health that, with the exception of folks that have recently dealt maybe with the scrapies and sheep, doing this type of thing with deer or elk may be a tall order from a standpoint just making sure everybody's fully trained up, and it's good to see at least the DNR's got somebody with real life experience on that, because there's almost a comment that in some cases, to make it really easy, particularly with these bigger animals, it's easier to kill them first and then do the biopsy. That doesn't work very well if you're interested in live animal tests. But I just look at this section 7, and it just doesn't pass the sanity test from a logistical standpoint that we have the people in place right now that can step out and manage to do all these tests or take all these samples. I know Dr. Larson's got the capacity to process them in a hurry. So yeah, I mean, I just hate to see unrealistic expectations, and I guess we're pretty guilty of that as politicians to float around in actual legislative language, because I think doing this type of an evolution in a very controlled, scientific, hard-nosed testing basis would be of great value. But I'm afraid that the way this looks, if you try to do it, it's going to be a helter-skelter mess that likely is going to not survive peer review if you try to draw any real legitimate scientific conclusions from it. So I know we've talked this bill to death and appreciate the bill author's work on this, but I would suggest that at this point, we've managed to derail the rulemaking process that was in place, kind of put a stop to that with the last bit of legislation that we've thrown out there last year. And now it looks like we're going to blow that up again if we change completely the entire management over to the DNR, because I guess that's a final question maybe for Commissioner Meyer. Have you already in preparation so we can really get this thing moving and we blow up all these artificial deadlines and just solve this problem? Have you already worked informally to come forward with all the rulemaking that you're going to have to do in the DNR to match all of these things in this bill? I mean, I would hope you've spent hours and days and weeks of work on all the rulemaking, and you're ready to push the button and get it out there the moment this bill is passed, since you'll be directly responsible for all that.
Commissioner Meyer, and then to Representative Eklund.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lewick, members, the language that was passed last year actually gives us concurrent authority to the rules and statutes the Board of Animal Health has related to white-tailed deer management. We're in the process of formalizing a memorandum of understanding that will clearly identify roles and responsibilities. And one of those roles and responsibilities are going to be the enforcement and inspection of white-tailed deer farms. At this point in time, the DNR is prepared to take over completely. So this transfer of authority from the board to the DNR, in ways we're already preparing for it, but no matter what, if it passes or not, we will continue down the concurrent authority path with the Board of Animal Health. As far as other rulemaking that would be required, we are prepared. We are having conversations with the board about their rulemaking package and anything that does come out of this session. We are prepared and ready to implement through a rulemaking package, formal Chapter 14 process. So I think the answer is yes to both of those pieces, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Eklund, as the author to Representative Lewick's question, Representative Heintzman, I haven't forgot about you. I want Representative Eklund to answer.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lewick's question, I think it's kind of ironic that we keep talking about livestock, but then supposedly these animals are going to be terribly hard to handle. All of our livestock needs veterinary visits at some point in time anyway. And Representative Lewick, I know that your cattle herd has veterinary inspections. That's why we have large animal veterinarians to do that. So I think it's kind of ironic that we're calling these livestock, but yet we can't control them. I know for a fact that when they take urine, when they take other things, they have the animals in a pen, so then or in a stall, so the veterinary work can be done. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Yeah. Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I wish the DNR luck, hopefully, 2 years down the road, we won't be like we were. Governor Plenty's office having to take the whole program back away from the DNR sometime in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, just a couple of comments, Representative Eklund, and then a question. There's quite a lot of argument that we've heard, and quite honestly, for the last several years that are summed up in many of the provisions in this bill. Some are relatively new, maybe the last few years, but for the most part, we've heard, you know, versions of what you're trying to accomplish here almost endlessly. And it is here once again a almost completely partisan approach to this issue. And when Republican members are speaking up, asking about how is this going to be done or this, you know, move forward, I can't help but think back to Representative Eklund, your comments when you introduced the bill, that we've listened, which I would argue there hasn't necessarily been
a lot of listening. And we've heard comments on this bill several times. That's true over the years, many, many, many times. And for the most part, nothing has moved because in the end, Democrats' approach to this is to regulate deer farms into the dirt. What I think we need to do is try to figure out a way to work together on this so that we can help these folks transition their businesses into a different model so that we can actually move the needle on this issue. And I want to thank Chair Sundin. Tomorrow, Republicans, myself specifically, have an opportunity to present a buyout bill. And, you know, maybe we could come together and figure that out, because it isn't that Republicans are against trying to solve this problem, which is a mischaracterization, I think, that's been made on a number of occasions. It's that it doesn't make sense to take all of these folks involved in what has been and continues to be a legal farming agriculture endeavor and regulate them out of business. Nipping at the edges, whether it be the fences or whether it be the ear tags or whether it be just fill in the blank, the provisions found in this bill. There's got to be a collective effort in Minnesota with divided government to work together. And up until this point, there really hasn't been that. The Senate authorship that you have, Representative Eklund, is your party. The authorship here on this bill is your party. And our opposition to working on this language has been, it's purely regulatory and targeted at deer farmers in a way that eventually bankrupts them. There's agreement on how can we figure out a way to help these people change their business model. And I hope that in tomorrow's hearing, we have that opportunity in Chair Sundin's committee to start that conversation, because it really hasn't been proposed from your side of the aisle, Representative Eklund. So, you know, my question in closing after that comment, it's long, I apologize, is as we're hearing this bill, what's different? Because we've, like I said, heard these provisions over and over and over and over again for years. We don't have bipartisan support in the Senate. We don't have bipartisan support here in the House. Representative Eklund, what can we expect? Because it doesn't look like there has been listening, as you suggested at the beginning of your comments.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Heitzman, we've been working on chronic wasting disease for 6 years. 2 years when you were in the majority, 4 years when we're in the majority. And listening to the testifiers, not one of them have approached me, and I've asked them about solutions. They don't have solutions. They just want no regulations. Representative Heintzman, I do not want to put the deer farmers out of business. But a fun fact about Minnesota's deer herds, there's a company called Wildlife Research. They do a lot of scent production. They do not buy one bit of their natural, of their raw material products for their company from the Minnesota deer farms, whitetail farms. It's because they are not certified. This company only uses certified farms, and if that's, that is certainly more regulation than what we've been going after here. I started out doing this, Representative Heintzman, so that wild whitetail would not come into contact with farmed whitetail. That's why we have the double fencing. That's why we have the redundant gates to keep that from happening. There's been no interest from the industry to work with me, and I've asked. All they've done is fight every bill that I've tried to do. I don't know if that's what your answer is, but that's what I'm coming up with.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Not to be redundant, Representative Eklund. We want to work on this issue together, but it doesn't seem like the listening that you mentioned is happening. What is different in what you're doing today compared to what you have been working on for the last 6 years, because it has gone virtually nowhere. And there needs to be bipartisan support. I'm certainly offering to work with you. I would love to have an opportunity to get some support. And maybe my bill is the path to do that together. But up until this point, even though it may not be your intention to put these people in a position financially that's harmful, that's where we're headed. So that's why I've offered the potential of a buyout bill. It may not be a perfect solution, but at least somebody's talking about it. I'm willing to, you know, and that conversation could maybe start tomorrow. But I still am asking, what's different about what you're doing here than what, because we've heard these provisions over and over again. What's different? Why is this going to move forward when it hasn't for the last 6 years?
Representative Eklund, and then Representative Becker-Finn, and then we're going to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Heintzman, I'm certainly willing to work with you. You know where my office is at. Come on upstairs or let me know. I'll come downstairs. We're one floor apart. That offer has not been made from anybody from your side of the aisle. All we've done is fight about our provisions. So we're moving this bill forward. Hopefully we get it done this year.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And wanted to kind of speak to, you know, what's different. What's different is that in 17 and 18, Chair Fabian wouldn't let us have this discussion in public in the form of any bills. So that's one thing that's different. We've also come a long way with this legislation. We have made progress. And what's changed is that the bad actors have continued to spread CWD throughout our state. When we first brought up this issue, we actually didn't have the problem in Crow Wing County, and we didn't have the problem in Beltrami County. And in the time that it's taken us to not do more on this issue, it has spread so that folks like we heard from Chairman Jackson, like Leech Lake, like Red Lake, more tribal communities, more of the places where so many of us hunt are now impacted, and they weren't impacted before. So sometimes we have to do the right thing, and we have to keep fighting even if it's hard and even if other people refuse to do anything about it. And so I am grateful to Representative Eklund for really the partnership we've all had throughout the last several years to do something about this issue. We're not going to give up just because it's hard. So if folks are sick of us talking about it, then maybe it's time for us to move forward some stronger legislation so that we can really stop what's happening, so we don't have any more CWD coming to any more counties in the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Eklund.
Representative Eklund renews his motion that House File 2814, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Vice Chair Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Wasilewicz votes aye. Lead Heintzman?
No.
Heintzman votes no. Representative Acomb?
Aye.
Acomb votes aye. Representative Eklund?
Eklund, no.
Eklund votes no. Representative Backer? Representative Backer? Representative Becker-Finn?
Aye.
Becker-Finn votes aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund votes aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher votes aye. Representative Green?
No.
Green votes no. Representative Igo is excused. Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Jordan votes aye. Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Keeler votes aye. Representative Lee?
Lee, aye.
Lee votes aye. Representative Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Lippert votes aye. Representative Lewick?
Lewick, no.
Lewick votes no. Representative Morrison?
Morrison, aye.
Morrison votes aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson votes no.
Nelson votes no. Representative Tice?
Tice votes no.
Tice votes no. Checking one more time for Representative Backer. Representative Backer. Mr. Chair, there are 11 ayes and 6 nays.
The ayes have it, and the motion is approved. Next up, House File 3273. Representative Wasowick, Vice Chair Wasowick, would you like to take the gavel?
I will do that. Representative Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
I would move, Madam Chair, I would move that House File 3273 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee.
Representative Hansen, tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is the moratorium bill. It is a smaller bill than Representative Eklund's recently passed bill. This would say no new registrations, and I believe there's an amendment to the bill.
Yes, I see Representative Becker-Finn has the A3 amendment. Representative Becker-Finn, would you like to move that amendment and explain it for us briefly?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the A3 amendment, and this is the reason that the bill would need to go to the Judiciary Committee. It relates to data. We've heard in previous testimony from folks that we want to be able to hold people accountable, and part of that is being able to know who those people are and where they are. So it would provide for there to be a disclosure so we know where these farms are located, as well as creating some liability language regarding folks who allow there to be escapes and allow CWD to spread in the wild.
Representative Becker-Finn moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor of the A3 amendment say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay.
No.
No.
The amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen, did you have anything else or should we go to testifiers?
Just a little bit on the amendment that was adopted. We did listen between where this bill came from ag to here. It defines that there could be a transfer of the registration within the family once as there is with some other licenses. And it provides conditions for that to protect the wild deer herd. I have several testifiers, and I do know that we have a little bit of extra time, but not a lot. So I would go to the testifiers.
All right, sure. Testifiers, if you can keep it relatively short so we can get all of you in. Tony Quillis is first. Mr. Quillis, introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis, and for the record again, I am with the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association. Just wanted to point out a couple of concerns and ask for some clarification, Madam Chair, on the A3 amendment. First concern was on Section 1 that deals with the data. Right now, that data with the names and addresses and location of the premises and the identification of the animals is private data. This would allow the location of the premises and the identification number of the premises of the animals to be public data. And I understand the concern that Representative Becker-Finn just expressed, but this also for in an unfortunate incident of where folks would be looking to do harm to one of these facilities would give them a roadmap and making that data public for folks that are hardworking farmers. So there's a concern there. And willing to discuss that further, Madam Chair. The second concern is where we talk about the owner is now responsible for the proper disposal on 2.9 and 2.10 and also on 3.7 and 3.8 for escaped and destroyed and for any cervidae that test positive as determined by the board. The concern there is what that disposal is. Is it landfills? Is it digesters and the costs that would come with that? And would there be any input from the state and federal agencies who handle that situation right now? Representative Hansen, Madam Chair, talked about the registration and transferring of that. And that was a discussion that we had at the previous committee and appreciate that clarification. But where that language is inserted is right after the moratorium and registration on the farm white-tailed deer. So we're just trying to see if there's some clarification there. Does that registration and transfer just apply to white-tailed deer, or is that all farm cervids? So just trying to get a clarification there, Madam Chair. And then finally, when we talk about who is liable for any additional costs of an escaped animal or additional surveillance. Surveillance areas start when there is a detection in the wild and go 15 miles and up to 3 years. So with the owner where there would be an escape that maybe through no fault of their own, maybe through fault of their own, but maybe through no fault of their own, such a natural disaster, a tornado, a flood, would they be responsible for all of the costs during that surveillance time of the 3 years? And so just trying to clarify that, and then concern there that the DNR and Board of Animal Health aren't enforcing that, Madam Chair, that the Attorney General is. Madam Chair, I'll stick around for questions, and I know you've got other testifiers.
Representative Becker-Finn, did you want to reply to some of those concerns?
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I do want to clarify regarding the data point that was brought up. This bill would not release the names and address. It would just be the premises location data. Part of this is because I don't know about others, but I've heard from folks all over the state who are very concerned about the land that they own, where they hunt. We don't want to be in a situation folks really want to know where these places are. I know when we had the dumping of carcasses happening in Beltrami County, we had members of the public were desperate to know where it was because they wanted to know how at risk their property and their hunting land was at risk. So that's part of what we're doing there. As to the comments about, I can't comment to everything in the amendment, but Mr. Quillis's questions, some of this is the reason we're sending it to the Judiciary Committee and encourage folks to bring those questions, in that space, where I'm not sure we want to get into force majeure discussions here in the Environment Committee, but certainly, those things that are relevant to civil law will be fully vetted in that committee.
Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. We are going to move on to the rest of our testifiers. Well, next up is Dave Carlson. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Dave Carlson, President of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 3273. You heard from me before about our member groups being very concerned about the CWD issue and how we can protect our wild deer herd. The disease is now considered endemic in parts of southeast Minnesota. And over the last few years, CWD has been discovered in Dakota County, Crow Wing County, and Beltrami County. And we now have 6 surveillance areas around the state for monitoring CWD. Hunters must have mandatory testing for harvested deer in some management areas. Dumpsters must be provided for carcass disposal. And all this is done with great expense and inconvenience to hunters and taxpayers alike. St. Louis County recently approved a moratorium on new cervid farms, and I know other counties are discussing that as well. It's time for the state to take the lead on actions like these. House File 3273 would prohibit new registrations for farmed white-tailed deer. Sportsmen and women support House File 3273. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, I have Tim Spreck. Mr. Spreck, if you want to identify yourself for the record again and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tim Spreck again with the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. On House File 3273, we've already discussed our position on the no new deer farms, that they're the lifeblood of the industry, and this would be a fantastic loss in their ability to conduct business in a meaningful way. Moving on to transfer of ownership on line 2.11 to 2.18, we appreciate that the author is trying to do something positive here. It does provide an option. Two concerns with that: it's only allowed to be done once and then you're done. And secondly, it's all predicated upon a CWD-free herd, which is based on a live animal test. And as we learned earlier, USDA has not approved this test, we don't believe it's going to be approved anytime within the next year. So this is really not workable on its face, Madam Chair. So we have to be cautious about mandating things in law that are not workable. And then moving on down to line 3.7 to 3.12, this section is actually not at all needed. So currently, under normal common practice, if there is a CWD positive farm, what happens is the USDA moves in, they negotiate their indemnification, they actually take ownership and possession of the herd, and then they dispose of the herd. So, you know, this language is actually not needed because anytime there's CWD on a farm, it's already taken care of at the federal level. And those are my comments on this bill, Madam Chair, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Just want to note that this bill is moving to another committee, so there are options to continue discussion and make changes if those need to be made. Next up, I have Amy Cordry. You want to introduce yourself again and proceed with your testimony?
In the interest of time, I would just ask you to remember my previous testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. And then I have Chairman Jackson on here, but the testimony he provided was for this bill. So unless he's still here, so if folks have questions, we'll move into questions now. And I see Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be very quick, as I heard a concern earlier about the fact that people are afraid that data might be out there about people's addresses, names of farmers. I'm looking at the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association website right now, and it appears everybody's names, addresses, and phone numbers are currently public information on their website, and they've got quite a listing out there. So I'm wondering a little bit about the concerns about the data privacy when they see the information is already public.
Representative Hansen, did you have anything you wanted to say on that one?
I think it speaks for itself.
Representative Heintzman, I see your hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking for some clarification. Maybe the amendment author could address line 3.9. The owner of a farm survey is liable for any additional costs associated with, and then it goes through a number of examples. It sounds, once again, really expensive and targeted at, I think, farm owners. If we could get just a ballpark idea what we're after there and what the intent is, I guess, well, maybe more specifically, what additional costs may be included beyond what's here in the actual language. It sounds somewhat open-ended.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a great example is what happened in Beltrami County, something that I don't know that any of us would have been able to get our heads around ahead of time before that happened. I don't know that I had ever contemplated the idea that a deer farmer would then dump infected carcasses on public land somewhere off their own property. So the idea would be, in cases like this, this would be a tool so that we can hold those kinds of people, you know, we can hold people accountable for the actions that cost. I believe the fence and the monitoring and everything else that has to be done now on that public land is into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'm sorry, I didn't know you were going to have that question. I could Google it, but I know that it was very expensive, and I don't think that the taxpayers should be paying for that. I think that the folks who are dealing with these situations should be the ones paying for it. And I guess, it's a good thing, you know, again, it's an amendment. We'll could keep working on this language, and you know, it does look like we will need an amendment, you know, so it's not just escape, but also you know, the disposal, you know, inappropriate disposal may also need to be added to that language. So thank you for pointing that out, Representative Heintzman. Yep.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Yeah, just a quick response. Thank you. Representative Becker-Finn, once again. You know, I think this is the second time you've mentioned that I should be sending questions ahead of committee. I think this is the time that we actually ask questions. So happy to offer the opportunity to discuss that as I'm looking at it and asking about it today in committee. It just sounds like we need to tighten that up, because any additional cost could be
literally any. So, I mean, we see a lot of other examples in agriculture where by no fault or negligence on the part of the farmer, you know, an animal is able to cross a fence because of a snowdrift, or, you know, that's a completely different scenario where fences are low. But I'm not sure how this could be used, you know, outside of the scope of what I'm assuming you intend. You know, the example you gave is a good one, but, you know, I think that there's some room there to make sure that if you're going to pursue this language, any could fall into a question going forward. So that was my question there. And looks like we're running out of time again, but, you know, I continue to have some of the same questions also that I mentioned earlier in Representative Eklund's bill. What's different? We've heard these kinds of bills over and over and over again the last 4 years. You guys have been in charge. Democrats can push any legislation that you want through these committees. You have the votes. And almost nothing gets done. So I'll offer the same comments as I did, like I said earlier, when visiting with Representative Eklund in this committee. Let's work together. And, you know, we can find agreement on this issue. I really believe that. Otherwise, I wouldn't be putting forward my own bill. And thanks again to, you know, Chair Sundin for hearing that. It is a starting point, and I'm ready to take some criticism if my bill isn't perfect either, and happy to work with Democrats to try and figure out a way to move the needle, because so far, Democrats haven't been able to do that in a bipartisan way, and it hasn't resulted in outcomes that I think the public would consider to be satisfactory. And you know, so into some of the other questions that I have, I'll just hang on to that, and maybe we can discuss it on another day. I'm sure there's going to be more bills like this, but I'm genuinely trying to be positive and try to think of some possibilities that don't crush an industry by 1,000 cuts, 1,000 different regulatory processes, but actually try to figure out a way to help move the business model in a direction that doesn't potentially impact negatively our deer herd in Minnesota.
We do have a little bit of extra time today in committee if you did have other questions, but I see Representative Beckerfin has her hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to clarify, I'm not suggesting you have to run everything by us before you bring it up in committee. I love a good public discussion. I was just trying to explain why I didn't have the number at the tip of my tongue. That's all. And really glad that we do have these public discussions. I will also note, too, because it keeps being commented in other committees as well, that we ran out of time when we were in person, too. There's always, you know, we could talk forever about these issues. And, you know, that's always going to be, you know, it's nature of the beast that there's only limited time to talk about all these important issues. But I appreciate you being willing to come to the table, Representative Heintzman. I do think, you know, it's unfortunate that we ever allowed this industry to exist in the first place. The idea that we would farm a wild animal that's also a protected species is problematic, and it is really too bad that we ever allowed people to get into this business in the first place. But the reality is that we have CWD in front of us. We have for a long time, and I'm really happy that we're moving this stuff forward. So thank you, Chair Hansen, for bringing the necessary attention to this issue.
Representative Hansen, I saw you unmuted. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
I was ready to close, Representative Heintzman has one more question. I think we've got time for one.
Representative Heintzman?
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's see. I guess I'll focus on something that I heard from our members on the Ag Committee, just a process question, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, on this bill, I apologize. We had heard that we were initially told that the bill would be laid over in Ag Committee, and we were never told that there was going to be a change of plans. Is what exactly transpired to reverse course on that?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Representative Sundin was pretty clear that these are moving forward. This has been the path that, particularly now with co-management, that things come to the DNR or come to the Environment Committee. This particular bill is going to go to the Judiciary Committee, so that will be a third stop for this bill with the amendments that was passed today. So I think Representative Sundin was clear that it was moving forward. This has been what has happened is the CWD bills have moved to the Environment Committee because of the threat of CWD to the wild herd, and particularly with co-management. So it's moving out of, both bills moved out of here today as well. Will be.
Representative Heinzman, did you have anything final? And then we'll move to closing remarks.
No, go ahead, Madam Chair. We can go ahead and end the discussions there today.
All right, Representative Hansen, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Prevention is better than cleanup. And we had an opportunity to be doing prevention. We've had that opportunity, as Representative Eklund mentioned, the previous bills for 5 or 6 years. Years of prevention. I want to set the record straight and reference former Representative Joe Hoppe, who actually had a bill to do several of these things. I think I even signed that bill as he went around trying to get members. The bill was never dropped because of opposition from the deer farming industry. It was never introduced during GOP control. And so the bill in front of you today has a number of new provisions. And the moratorium language, I did adapt it to concerns raised in the Ag Committee. And the additional conditions have forced it to go to the Judiciary. We could have prevented and contained CWD if we had adopted several of these provisions. But it has been nothing but opposition from the Senate GOP. You are correct, Representative Heisman. We passed a number of these last year in Representative Eklund's bill and some in this bill. And the result was co-management, not something that we proposed. And the problem continues. As Representative Becker Finn referenced, there have been outbreaks and outbreaks and outbreaks since this journey began in earnest several years ago. The Audit Commission report, as Vice Chair Wozlik mentioned, was also now several years ago. These efforts gather dust because there's absolutely no interest in doing them. And now, as we're approaching 5 and 6 years on this, we see the effort to go to the public trough, to go to the public to pay for the cleanup. And the public has been paying for the cleanup for several years in the wild herd. We've had to expend millions of dollars out of our budget and the DNR to clean up the mess. And we will have to spend millions more. So prevention is better than cleanup. And these provisions would prevent further spread. We haven't appeared to have learned anything in disease management, that containment is what we need to do to prevent further spread. The costs will continue if we do not adopt some of these provisions. The cost will continue to go up for the public sector and the private sector. I ask for your support to stop that cost increasing, protect our wild herd, and do what's right for Minnesota.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 3273, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Vice Chair Wozlik.
Wozlik, aye.
Wozlik, aye. Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Heinzman.
No.
Heinzman votes no. Representative Akam. Acom votes aye. Representative Ackland?
No.
Ackland votes no. Representative Backer?
Backer votes no.
Backer votes no. Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Becker Finn votes aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund votes aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher votes aye.
Fisher votes aye. Representative Green?
No.
Green votes no. Representative Igo is excused. Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Jordan votes aye. Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Keeler votes aye. Representative Lee?
Lee, aye.
Lee votes aye. Representative Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Lippert votes aye. Representative Lewick?
Lewick votes no.
Lewick votes no. Representative Morrison?
Morrison, aye.
Morrison votes aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson votes no.
Nelson votes no. Representative Tice?
Tice, no.
Tice votes no. Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 7 nays.
Motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the next committee stop. Chair Hansen, did you have anything you wanted to mention before we adjourn for the day?
We had to adjust the schedule for Thursday. Representative Lippert has a couple of bills. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for moving there. And so the schedule is going to continue to be fluid as we try to get a number of bills heard in the next few weeks.
All right. That is all for committee today. So with that, we are adjourned.